Living a life that depicts the teachings of Islam is the dream of every Muslim. Everyday Muslim, Saturdays 11 a.m. on Women Radio 91.7, is in collaboration with Muslim Public Affairs Center, NPAC. Everyday Muslim will address the misconceptions on Islam, foster a peaceful coexistence, and guide the everyday Muslim on the journey in Islam. Everyday Muslim, Saturdays 11 a.m. on Women Radio 91.7, simplified understanding of the deen.
Honestly, it doesn't matter at the end of the day. What matters is that you and I are brothers and sisters under one umbrella. This is how I'd like to welcome you this beautiful Saturday morning to Everyday Muslim, live on WFM 91.7. You want to get every person you know on the surface of this earth to tune in right now, because subhanAllah, today's show promises to be refreshing. I think that's how I like to keep it simple. Today we're going to be looking at patriotism beyond the pulpit and the minbar. Faith leaders as nation builders. You know what that means. I've mentioned both the pulpit and the minbar, and that only says one thing. We are going to be working with two remarkable guests today, inshallah. They are already here with us. They are joining virtually from their bases. I'm going to introduce first Pastor Jeff Oluwagbemiga. He's a multifaceted personality. He's a pastor, clinical and organizational psychologist, family enhancement coach, mental health advocate, and human capacity development consultant. He brings over 25 years of experience in public health programming with international NGOs across Nigeria. His transformative work spans personal, family, community, and national spheres, fostering a legacy of positive change. He also pastors House of Torrential Grace Church in Abuja, which this was launched in 2018 after he stepped aside from a ministry where he had served faithfully for 24 years. Pastor Jeff is a passionate teacher and preacher of the word. He is deeply committed to personal growth and helping people live ready for the Lord. Pastor Jeff has been married to his wife Ayodele for 28 years, and together they have three children. He has authored three books, with a fourth soon to be unveiled. Pastor Jeff, good morning.
Good morning. Good to be here.
It's good lovely morning, to have you, sir. You're welcome.
Thank you.
Sheikh Nuruddin Lemo is also here with us. He's joining virtually from his base. He's a director of research and training at the Dawah Institute of Nigeria. He's also the Assistant General Secretary of Islamic Education Trust, IET, in MENA. He's a technical advisor, Nigerian Environmental Society, Niger State Branch. He's a founding member of the Regional Center for Expertise in MENA. He's also a member of the advisory board of the New Horizons College in MENA. He has been a member, National Awards Committee, Ford Foundation Jubilee Transparency Awards, in Nigeria and the teacher trainer Nurul Huda Islamic College in Sydney, Australia. He's a director of the Development Initiative of West Africa, the Interfaith Activity and Partners for Peace, as well as a member of various committees of Jamaatul Nasrul Islam, JNI. He's the Dawa Coordination Council of Nigeria. He's also a member of the Dawa Coordination Council of Nigeria. He was one of those nominated by the Nigerian Supreme Council for Islamic Affairs, the NSCIA, to represent Nigeria, Nigerian Muslims at the last national conference, CONFAB 2014. Salaam alaikum, Sheikh. Good morning, sir.
Wa alaikum salam. Thank you very much, and good morning, Pastor.
Good morning. It's good to have both of you here. SubhanAllah. Nigeria is at a defining crossroads as we speak. The nation is grappling with overlapping crises, worsening insecurity across regions, economic pressure that has pushed millions into survival mode, declining trust in our political leaders, and a growing sense of moral fatigue amongst the citizens. In moments like this, Nigerians historically turn to the faith leaders for guidance, reassurance, moral direction, often more than to the politicians or even the institutions that are set up. Nigeria is also, incidentally, one of the most religious countries in the world. Churches and mosques are full, religious influence remains strong. Yet, paradoxically, this deep religiosity has not translated into national cohesion or ethical governance, for that matter, or even collective responsibility in the least. Instead, what we witness right now is rising polarization, selective outrage, and a tendency to retreat into religious identities rather than a shared national purpose. This really raises a critical concern. Has patriotism been outsourced solely to the states, while faith leadership remains confined to the pulpit and the minbars? Or is this the moment for religious leaders to redefine their roles as moral architects of the nation, shaping values, courage, accountability, and civic responsibility beyond religious boundaries? And that's what we're going to be looking at this morning. I'm going to come to you first, Pastor Jeff. Nigeria is currently facing insecurity. We've been facing this for decades now. There's economic hardship, and it seems to only get worse. It's not looking like there's hope at the end of that tunnel. We can't see that bright light. There's a deep trust deficit. At this critical point, what should patriotism look like for faith leaders beyond preaching, prayers, and public declarations of faith?
Well, thank you very much for this opportunity. Sheikh, good morning, sir. It's good to be on the same platform with you. I hope we've seen you online.
My pleasure.
On the same platform. It's a great honor. Wow, that's a very tough question, because that's exactly the situation. And we can't run away from it. We can't shy away from it. But I would think that the safety of the commonwealth of humanity should come first, because we are first of all human beings first. Somehow, some way, we find ourselves polarized by several things, including religion. But every other person is still a human being. I learned this quite long ago, and though I had a lot of backlash from doing that. But the very first thing I like to see in everyone is the humanity. So will it be possible, or is it possible for us at the religious platform to first of all see everybody first as a human being? Because that's how, if you don't preserve humanity, then what's the essence of the religion that we are professing? So I would think very well that preservation of humanity should come first. Faith leaders have their own biases, which is normal, but not at the essence of humanity. Because at the end of the day, the person that God is going to use to help you might not have religious coloration. I mean, from personal experiences and from things I've heard from people, people that came out to help them, people that came out to salvage a situation for them, people that came out to rescue them from hardship are not probably, most of the time, not people of their own religion. So that means that God is teaching, from my own standpoint, that we need to see humanity first. Because it even takes a woman to have a religion. I'm not sure if any man have religion. I don't think so. But it takes you to be a woman forced to have a religion. So I think we should be looking at that first. Even though that's a long call, and that's a tough call, because as we go on, we're going to be talking of other things. We already have ingrained things in us that will make us to first of all want to see somebody in the light of religion. But I think we should be seeing people first from the light of humanity, and the safety of the commonwealth of humanity should come first if we all want to collectively remain alive. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much, Pastor Jeff. I'm going to pose the same question to you, Sheikh Nuruddin, and that's because I honestly want to understand from your point of view, what does patriotism look like for faith leaders? You are a faith leader. What does patriotism look like to you?
Firstly, thank you very much for having me on the program. A great pleasure to meet Pastor also. And, I think I'll just be repeating in different ways what the pastor has just said. These are areas of common ground between Islam, Christianity, and humanity living with moral virtue. Patriotism definitely has to move from symbolic piety and commitment to Nigeria. It's not about just a flag. It's not just about a passport and an identity. I am Nigerian. Yes, I am that also, but not just that. Mm. There is a moral responsibility that faith is supposed to infuse in me so that I play out my Nigerianness with ethics, with a concern for fairness, rule of law, honesty, and respect for institutions that try to make sure that these virtues live beyond our lives, that these virtues are more impactful. That's why we set up institutions such as government, etc. So definitely the need to go beyond just praying for Nigeria. One of the litmus tests, our scholars tell us, of iman, of faith in God, is Amil and Salihan. Like every verse that talks about the need for faith in the Quran is followed immediately by the need for good action. So it's not just I pray and just that vertical relationship between me and my creator, but the horizontal relationship between me and creation. And so I would say the litmus test of whether you really have faith or not is the degree of fairness and compassion you are ready to show creation. We are taught as Muslims that the maqasid, or the objectives of the Islamic way of life, is the preservation, the promotion, the enhancement and protection of faith in God, that people should be free to worship God. There's no compulsion in religion. People's freedom should be respected to pursue what is required for a healthy life, the development of the intellect through education, family values, property, human dignity, and of course, justice and fairness. And so Islam teaches that ethical citizenship is part of religious duties. Paying your taxes, rejecting bribery, respecting the laws of the land, speaking truth consistently, not selectively, and regardless of who is in power and who is my tribe and who is my religion. We look at God's circle of concern. And from the Quran, God sent messengers to all of humanity. God's concern is not just with one group, one ethnicity, with just one gender. The Quran talks about Prophet Muhammad as a rahma lil alameen, a source of compassion to the world. Like, that is bigger than Nigeria. And so if all you can be concerned about is the goodness of my neighbor, okay, let that even be the Nigeria you are concerned about, but be good and do something. So I would conclude by saying, love of one society is a moral obligation. The protection of the lives, the dignity, the social trust is beyond just a responsibility of the government. Faith leaders must help citizens and their flock see Nigeria not as the government, but as a shared moral project, an intergenerational heritage. You know, I inherited a Nigeria that was built by people who have passed away. Yeah. I will pass on Nigeria to a people that have been born and those who are yet to be born. What type of legacy do I leave behind? Because on the day of judgment, God will ask me every atom's weight of good I did and left behind. I will have to answer, what did I do with the time and opportunity I was given? I have been given an opportunity to influence generations and, you know, over 200 million people that because I'm a citizen, I have free access to these people. I can travel anywhere. Nobody asked me for a visa within the boundaries of this country. And so my circle of influence, my privileged identity as a Nigerian allows me to be more influential within this area, but of course to love our neighboring countries, and because of the concept of neighborhood goes to, you know, in the Christian tradition, they have this beautiful metaphor of the Good Samaritan. And if you look at the context, the Samaritan was a person of another religion, another ethnicity, a person you'd even want to look down upon. And yet, that summarizes what your neighborly responsibilities should encompass. Oh. So I feel, knowing that we come from God, we go back to God, we will answer for how we used our religion. It is important that we don't turn religion into a bigger tribe. Hmm. Just because you belong to mine, that's it. But to be loyal to the virtues and values and put God first. Sorry for over talking.
No, there's no over talking, subhanAllah.
You know over talking, we enjoyed it.
Yeah, the message is clear, and that's what we really need to get out there. Thank you so much, Sheikh. I'm coming to you, Pastor, very quickly. Nigeria is one of the most religious countries in the world, yet corruption and moral decay remain widespread. In fact, I would use the word endemic. It's like it's almost innate, it's inherent in us right now. Where exactly did we go wrong, and how can faith leaders begin to raise citizens who are not only prayerful but also principled and accountable?
Wow, tough call. We need to lead by transparent examples. Mm. We have been talking about leading by examples, but are those examples transparent enough? Mm. Because as a psychologist, I would like to just say this, that when anytime you raise your voice to say something, in whatever statement you are making, you're also raising questions in the heart of the people,
right,
and asking this thing that this man is asking us to do, does he do it?
Right.
And so when you now speak to a congregation and say you're a religious leader and you're telling people to do XYZ and not to do XYZ, what are the fruits that you are showing? Because that is the main thing. Unfortunately, in my own side of the religion, we see a lot of gifts, and gifts might make us to absorb the need for fruits. When somebody has spiritual gifts, he does a lot of things, and when he has decided to now become a bit of a philanthropist, and then begin to give people things, a lot of time people want to shy away from the fact that this person is not leading by example.
Mm.
And that's the challenge. Leading by transparent example, leading by relatable modeling, a modeling that I can relate with, not something I follow. We are human beings. If you are teaching me something, I should be able to learn it from you. Just like when we tell parents, parents don't just teach children on paper or on books what they should do.
Mm.
Modeling.
Right.
That modeling is the way to teach. That modeling is the way to teach. We saw Jesus model a lot of things for people then, and he's asking us to do that modeling now. But unfortunately, that modeling seems to be going down. And the more we have rhetorics and there are no modeling, we're still going to have challenges. Anybody can talk. Talk is cheap. Anybody can talk and, oh my, what does it cost to go online to start preaching? It's not just one Android phone and 200 megabytes or something. You create a platform for yourself. But what are the fruits? What can we see you doing? It's unfortunate that we have so many crazy things happening in my own side of religion, and people and leadership is being eroded. That even when guys like us who do not have that kind of big platform are trying to say to him, nobody wants to listen to you because the people up to an extent have not been doing what they needed to do. And I remember that Jesus said in the scripture that the devil came to me and he found nothing. Meaning that the devil came with a searchlight, the devil came with a spot check, and he couldn't find anything. How many of us leaders can say that today, that Satan came to, okay, let's just say EFCC came to spot check on me, and they found nothing. That's the challenge. That's the challenge. There's an experiment that somebody did a long time ago. We studied this in psychology. I see he sent a telegram, those are your telegram, to 120 persons. And what he said is that the secret is out. The police are after you. Leave the country. He sent to 120 people. He sent it on a Friday night. By Saturday evening, 90-something of them have fled the country. Now, if they send that to me or send that to Sheikh, we don't ask, what did I do that I need to run?
Hmm.
Okay, what did I do? Who is running after me? What did I do? If you do something, you will run. Hmm. If you don't do anything, they say, let them come, I'm here.
Hmm.
So that's until we get to that point. Honestly speaking, I am as grieved as you in a whole lot of things that happens to my own side.
Hmm.
Because it's like, what are we going to do? And that is creating problem for the entire Nigerian system. Because now everybody's saying, ah, no, don't mind the person. He has blown. It's only person who have not blown are telling the truth. Those who have blown are not telling the truth. It shouldn't be like that. So we should come to the point of relatable modeling so that we can teach values and priorities.
Right.
Priorities need to be taught also. Sheikh mentioned morality. Yes. Morality needs to be taught, and then priorities need to be taught also. Thank you very much. Let me stop here for Sheikh.
Yes, thank you so much. I was going to ask Sheikh if he had one or two more things to add to this. Basically, how can we raise the next set of citizens who will be accountable, who will be principled, in addition to what Pastor Jeff has said? I mean, Pastor Jeff has talked about transparent leadership, do as I do, not as I say. So actually model what you're saying. Anything else you'd like to add, Sheikh?
Well, yes. Thank you very much. And I agree with everything that the Honorable Pastor has mentioned. In addition, I think we need to, as religious leaders, make sure we do not teach religion as if religion is just about identity and theatricals and the dressing and the symbolism without the ethical, moral core that religion is supposed to change in human beings. Yeah. And so, you know, we teach a lot of rituals without sufficiently teaching transparency, integrity, accountability, respect for the public trust. Many sermons focus on personal salvation. How do you get to heaven? As if that's all God cares about. As if social ethics and social responsibilities do not really matter. And sometimes, even when we come to condemn corruption, we look at it as something out there. As the, you know, we don't look within our own communities, as the pastor mentioned, within the Muslim community. To be honest, so long as you are human beings, any talk you want to talk about the splinter in the eyes of the other, there's always the log in your own, to borrow a biblical metaphor. So the dishonesty in our communities, we need to talk about those. The ethnic and religious favoritism, you know, we seem to see wrong that was done by others. We seem not to see wrong done by ourselves. If you're not careful, we end up evolving to become the wolves in sheep's clothing. People who talk about we care for the whole community, whereas in reality, we really just care about ourselves. And so faith leaders must not just preach forgiveness of corruption. No, preach consequences, preach justice. Like, why do we care about, okay, we should forgive the perpetrator. Well, how is that helping the victim? We should be more victim-centric. And if it's victims you are looking about, then you cannot be tolerating impunity. We should teach about dua and prayer, but not look at it as it replaces social responsibility. We are told by the Prophet Muhammad that you should tie your camel and pray God to help protect your camel. In other words, not just about we will pray for Nigeria. What are you doing? If we look at some of the conditions that the Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him, gave for prayers to be answered, is your source of income and livelihood pure? You can't be corrupt. You chopped corrupt money, and somehow you're expecting that God is on your side. And so to emphasize that religion teaches and treats corruption as a moral crime, not just a political inconvenience, not just bad for Nigeria. It's bad for your own soul. And that when we are raising children and speaking to our population, it's not just to teach them to ask, is this right or wrong? No, but knowing right and wrong, even Satan knows the difference between right and wrong. It's doing right and not doing wrong. It's not just, can I get away with it? If not, in all honesty, if you say, I know there's God, I know there's a hereafter, I believe in the following thing. Well, even Satan will say, me, I know that one.
Right.
It's not about knowledge. It's does this knowledge translate into making you a more morally upright asset to community? Are you an instrument of God's compassion, you know, or are you just there as another parasite of society, claiming good, talking good, looking like a harmless sheep, but you're actually a wolf in sheep's clothing? Thank you.
Sheikh, I'm going to stay with you because I'm glad you talked about these corrupt leaders, and that's because they're from us anyways. So we Nigerians, a lot of us believe that religious leaders have enormous influence. But why aren't you facing or confronting the powers? We feel that you, the religious leaders that have so much influence and power, are not wielding it enough. We think you avoid confronting power. Is that the case, sir?
Well, one of those challenges is when we use language like you and we, and we put everybody together. Our prayer is that as Nigerians are diverse, so are religious leaders diverse. But you have an important point, you know, to whom more is given, more is expected. If you understand religion better, when we expect to see greater morality, wisdom, ethics coming from that direction. Unfortunately, every good thing has a counterfeit. You know, like, again, not to stereotype bad people, we all have an element of our dark side too as human beings. And we never, you know, they say the moment you start saying I am good and humble, that's already evidence that there's a wolf somewhere speaking.
Indeed.
When it comes to our silence in the presence of corruption, generally religion actually teaches silence in some areas, but it's, you know, there's what we call righteous indignation, where you are intolerant to certain things. And there are areas where silence is good, silence is serene, silence can be wisdom, but also silence can be complicity. Mm-hmm. Silence can be a bystander, cheerleader of bad going on. And if when you're quiet about it, it gives people confidence to carry on. Silence is justified only when it prevents greater harm. Silence that protects privilege, protects corruption, protects moral failure, this is not a virtue. And so there's the need to distinguish between where I am being quiet while I look at a strategy, because unfortunately, you need to have some kind of both strategic restraint, but not cowardly avoidance. You don't want to talk to a member of your flock who you need to groom, and you give him an overdose of preaching in one day.
Right.
Because then he doesn't come back, and then you've lost him. Now, how do you influence? As humans, there's always the person who, okay, you didn't talk to power as you should. Even a doctor is not every time they will go for surgery. Like, let's look at simpler ways of helping people turn. So speaking truth does not always mean shouting. It can mean documentation. It can mean mediation, advocacy, principled engagement. What you want is effectiveness. The public judges faith leaders not by your proximity to power, but the consistency of your conscience. Do you tell the truth? So, unfortunately, credibility is lost when our outrage and our righteous indignation becomes selective, it becomes partisan. And so I think what we need in Nigeria is religious leaders that are respected by all sides, religious leaders that people feel these people respect the virtues for which religion exists. And while his batteries of faith might be charged by Christianity, my batteries may be charged by Islam, but the key thing is they work towards better communication, a better future. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Sheikh. This is superb. I'm looking at this and I'm worried, like, I wish this will just carry on. Anyways, let me come to you, Pastor Jeff, very quickly. At the moment, religious differences seem to be increasingly exploited to divide Nigerians home and away. And I know why I say the word away. We know what's going on with our saviors from outside, right? What concrete interfaith actions, not just conferences and statements, what can faith leaders do to reduce the suspicion and help rebuild national trust?
Well, I'm happy that you mentioned the word suspicion. It's already there and it's grounded. And I think this kind of thing that we are doing, this one-on-one interface team, will tell a lot of story to go a long way. Number one, the one-on-one dialogue can help us to create action points.
Okay.
Now, for me and Sheikh to sit on the same table to discuss means that, number one, we are tolerant, means that, number two, we are open-minded, means that, number three, we are ready for a takeaway, a point that points that we can take up. I think we need to start from that point. Because now we are polarized. We have been polarized for a long time, but it's like we're getting more polarized, and it's like me against you. Even when religion is not even the topic at all. It's not even the topic, but the fact that somebody's answered a name and it's like from this part of Nigeria, you're already polarized. Look, if you just check online, just randomly go to Twitter and see the comments of people. Just look at their name. You'll be able to predict their comment. It's as bad as that. So I think you just need that you can start from a one-on-one dialogue. Honestly, one-on-one dialogue, we send a message back to the congregation that, well, if these two people are sitting together, that means they have something to talk, to say. Even though there'll be backlash, I've explained that before. There was a time I do a lot of things about marriage. And by the way, I followed Miriam Demo. I think that's your sister, is that?
Yes, indeed.
Yes. I follow her a lot, and she's very loaded. And there was a time when I did something like that. I had to invite the Sheikh, I think Sheikh Adam Ado from Gombe, and one from Lagos, and one other person, and some pastors. People came and said, well, am I inviting Muslim to discuss marriage? I said, what do you mean? I said, okay, have you listened to what we have discussed? That was the time I understood that divorce in Islam is not as easy as they keep saying that, just divorce. When the Sheikh analyzed it, I was shocked, honestly, and I learned, I documented it. So something like that can send message back to people that, see, these people are not fighting. If they are not fighting, then why should we fight? Even though it's not going to be magical, it's not going to be like snap a finger like that, but we can start from one-on-one dialogue with action points that we can take back to our people. And it takes boldness to do that. It takes a lot of boldness to be able to do that. I think that's one thing I just want to mention, because if that comes from leadership, it can trickle down and people can begin to pick the points that they need to help the nation grow. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Pastor Jeff. I'm tempted. I have to go to Sheikh Nuruddin, because he has an arsenal on that, because he's deeply involved in interfaith dialogue. So beyond the conferences, beyond the seminars, beyond the talk shows, Sheikh, what else can we do, really?
I think it's to make sure that interfaith relations is not treated as an event. Like, we've done it. We finished. Okay, go. Everybody get back to your dorm and everything you like. Yeah, exactly. You know, it has to be, you know, cooperation in ordinary life. Now, what you'll find, go to the market. Like, go online, as Pastor said, and you see Nigeria is on fire. Go offline, and people in the market are carrying on with everyday business. You know, thank God it's not a reflection of online. Online, you actually wonder, you know, this is a problem with the algorithms that put you in this echo chamber where you keep seeing the things you like to see. The internet was not developed. Social media was not developed to help challenge you, but to reinforce what you like, to give you the things you seem to like watching. So unfortunately, it creates this false idea of what society is, and it's very worrisome, especially for the next generation. But I think, you know, in line with what the pastor said, we need to go beyond interfaith work that is about harmony building, you know, which is about, okay, I spoke with a pastor today, and he spoke with me, and I have his number, and I have a good relationship with him. And now what? You build a bridge. What can cross the bridge? Beyond we are friends, What can we do together about health, about education, about relief, about corruption, about almajiri, about dilapidating everything, you know, services to the community? What kind of rapid response can we have to de-escalate crises when rumors start to spread? What shared Muslim-Christian platforms can we have to counter fake news, inflammatory narratives, things that, you know, when somebody wants to start a fire, what can we do to quickly pour a bucket of water on his matches? Like, you can't even bring another one. Because the people who are creating the problem are always a fringe minority. Can we look at more interfaith youth mentorship focused on leadership and civic duty? So I think this, you know, what I find is a lot of interfaith work happens during time of peace. Mm-hmm. When it gets dark, even the stars don't appear. Whereas when we are in times of tension, like now, and I'd like to congratulate MPAC for this initiative, this is when we need the bridges we have built to start performing functions when people need to hear something, standing together in moments of tension. Otherwise, a lot of our leaders are like flags. They look at the direction the wind is blowing, and they blow in that direction. And sometimes it's hotheads that are blowing the wind. So as I said in the beginning, and, you know, along what Pastor also said, trust grows when people see cooperation in everyday life, not just press conferences, interfaith meetings, some event. That, you know, we need to even highlight the good news that what is on social media is just on social media. On the ground, people have everyday lives, and there's the everyday interfaith cooperation going on in the market, in the hospital, in schools, in government offices. The danger is when people start wanting online to go offline. That is more worrisome. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Sheikh. I'm going to come to you, Pastor, and it's just directly off of what where Sheikh landed. We're in the heat of this Christian genocide narrative, and it has gained global traction. How can Christian leaders advocate for justice and protection of lives without promoting the exaggerated or misleading narratives that further polarize this nation?
Interesting. Even among us, there are people are throwing tantrums on the use of the word genocide.
Hmm.
And that was what made me to go and actually go and look for the meaning. How did it originate?
Hmm.
And what does it mean? What does genocide actually mean? What entails genocide? Because if you follow the media, people in the North are different. We are different. People, Christians in the North are a bit different, so to say, in terms of approach than we that are in the South or whatever. And that is a bit of dichotomy. But when it comes to the genocide thing, what exactly does it mean? When I started reading, I found that, okay, what is the intention? There have been killings, there can be wars, there can be a whole lot of damages done to people's lives, but what is the intention? So if you now say there's genocide, though, there's no genocide, though, I don't want to talk about it. I want to talk about, okay, what is the way forward from here?
Mm.
Because if we still argue about it as happening, it's not happening, we'll lose time. What is the way forward from here?
Hmm.
Number one, I don't think we should say in such a way that it will not make somebody to go and carry cutlass and look for the next neighbor to kill. No. If we say it that way, then we are not truthful. Even Jesus will not do that. Something has happened, yes. How do we now change the narrative? How do we work on the mindset of our own people? Not to see that next person as, not to see the person and then revenge will now stir up in you to do damage to that person, or to stop somebody from getting what the person needs to get by right or by qualification, just because we think something happened, which actually happened. But now, do we want to prevent or not?
Mm.
I want to be able to talk about my own experiences, because it's difficult to speak for other people in this. And unfortunately, our Christian bodies don't have a single mouth on this.
Mm. Mm.
We don't have a conclusion, meaning that they have not sat to meet at that leader's level to come out with something that is joint. Everybody just come in and say his own. So it's, so that put people like us on a kind of polarization. You don't even know what to say. But I think that, okay, it has happened, it has happened. How can we prevent? Our children are seeing this thing. Our young people are seeing this thing. Do we want them to carry ammunition and start killing each other? Would Jesus be glorified for us doing that? So that is the point, because we should look for solutions. Yes, while looking for solutions, we should also review what has happened and see, okay, what are the errors? What are the assumptions? Because a lot of time, it is assumption, because sorry, let me quickly say this. There was a time that I came home with a Muslim friend. And my mom said, ah, who is this person? I said, my friend, say Muslim. I said, what's the meaning of that? So he, the first thing that she could see in everything is that the guy is a Muslim. I said, what does that mean? And she kept quiet, but she said, but he's Muslim. I said, what exactly does it mean? So there are preconceptions, there are assumptions. And I've been a free-minded person all my life, and if I were not, I would not hate that friend or walk away from him just because he's Muslim. What has that got to do with our friendship? So we need to reorientate ourselves. We need to go back to the basics. We need to speak with one voice, which the church is not doing now. We are not speaking with one voice. We are just saying that, oh, Trump is coming, Trump is coming. Trump has his own interest. Trump is a Republican. Trump will leave in 4 years' time. He will go back to his house. So what happens to us? So it's our own challenge. We need to sit down. So sitting down is the issue and agreeing. The word genocide, like I said, I've researched on it, and I will not be able to come and say, ah, it's a genocide, it's not a genocide. What can we do to prevent it? That's all I can say from here. I will not say it's a myth, I will not say it's a reality, because there's a whole lot of sides to it.
Yes, multiple sides. I totally understand that, Pastor Jeff. Thank you so much for weighing in on it. Yes, and so I hear you loud and clear. We need to do more. We need to show up more as a united front from either sides of the divide. I hear you loud and clear. Thank you so much, Pastor Jeff. I'm going to come to Sheik very quickly, because as the Christians are shouting Christian genocide, we Muslims also feel marginalized. We feel unfairly profiled in discussions around security. Just because I don the hijab, I'm automatically labeled a terrorist, right? How can Islamic scholars more deliberately counter false generalizations whilst also confronting internal challenges that these extremists exploit? Sheikh, sir.
So firstly, we definitely must reject all false generalizations without denying real problems. The way it starts, and Pastor gave an example, it usually starts with a stereotype where you have a box you have put somebody in. He is not like us. She is not like us. You forget their essential humanity. So it starts with a stereotype. And if you don't put the problem of stereotype, if you don't straighten that problem, it evolves to become a prejudice. And if you allow prejudice and normalize it, it starts to become discrimination. If you see discrimination and you do nothing, it starts becoming unjust. And if you leave injustice is one of those things that is unsustainable. Somebody will correct it through violence if you don't do it through peaceful means. So when we see violence, and we want to blame the violent youth, the violent Christian, the violent non-Muslim, the violent Muslim, the violent whatever, ask yourself, how did it get here? What was left by civil people? And they didn't do anything, and now we are bearing the fruits of that abandonment and apathy to people's grievances. So, yes, we must reject false generalization. We must defend the majority of Muslims, majority of Christians need to be defended from unfair collective blame. There is no such thing as Muslims are, Christians are. If you even tell me, oh, I know you're a Muslim, I can tell everything you believe, I already feel a bit insulted because I disagree with some Muslims on something. What do you mean? You want to know my religion? Ask me. You want to know what I believe? Ask me. So, yes, we should defend the majority from unfair collective blame. At the same time, confront extremist ideas clearly and publicly, not denying we don't have our own extremists. not denying our extremists don't have victims on the other side. Every minority, you will find, unfortunately, are also perpetrators where they are the majority. If you move now, for example, there's a lot on social media about the persecution of Igbos, Muslim minorities in Igbo areas. They would complain about the same thing, word for word, about what the Muslim, the Christian minority is facing in another part of the country. Where one ethnic group is the majority, they don't see anything wrong with them. Go to where they are the minority, they have complaints. But the same thing, you know, you find this mirroring, unfortunately. So religious scholars definitely need to teach correct understanding. From the Muslim side, the community needs to understand what jihad is. What is jihad? Jihad is not terrorism. Jihad is not fighting injustice. Jihad is not fighting killing innocent people or anything that involves injustice is by definition no more jihad. Islam teaches respect for authority. You can't just take the law into your own hands as if courts don't exist, as if people studied law for no reason. We will be the judges, we will be the judiciary, we will be the jury, we will be the executors. Like, in which religion do you have that type of thing? We must teach that there's a system of justice, and even if you disagree, there's a system of moving from one level of the justice system to the other. We must challenge narratives that try to justify violence or victimhood without responsibility. Even if I'm a victim, it doesn't give me the responsibility to behave the way I want just because I've been hurt. So we must realize that extremism will continue to thrive where there are grievances and there's ignorance and we don't do anything about it. Where there is confusion about religion and we remain silent. You cannot underestimate the power of ignorant, stupid people when they get united. On the international level too, unfortunately. You know, once you get certain combinations, once people unite, they are really powerful. And so scholars need to speak in local languages, offline, online, youth spaces, not just academic circles, which is where you find a lot of these conferences asking some academic to come and speak. We need to remember that owning our internal challenges as Muslims strengthens our credibility. It doesn't weaken it. We say we don't want to wash our dirty linen in public, but then you seem to be behaving as if you have no dirty linen and the other person only sees dirty linen. So if you do not call out what is wrong as wrong, irrespective of who's doing it, it's difficult for you to earn credibility. So I think this issue of the false generalizations, while we will blame people for stereotyping and prejudice, it is true. But we need to do our own job also to make sure that we confront our own extremists, say what is wrong for what it is, irrespective of who does it.
Absolutely, absolutely.
That's a good one.
Thank you so much, Sheikh. We are coasting home right now, and that's just because we do not have a lot of time on our side. I sincerely apologize to our audience. I've seen the calls coming through. I honestly want to take your calls, but we do not have that time. I apologize, please. Forgive me, and, you know, just stay with us. Let's get the most from Pastor Jeff and Sheikh Olemu. I'm going to come to you, Pastor, very quickly, and of course, Sheikh was also weighing in on it once Pastor is done. Nigerians' youth are angry, frustrated, increasingly disconnected from the state. What responsibility do you think faith leaders bear in redirecting this, their frustration, and at least, you know, rechanneling that energy towards constructive nation building?
All right, thank you very much. I think we need to go back to revisiting the value system. The family value system, the cultural value system that we started with before we even enter one religion or the other. We start with that thing. This thing they call home training. I don't know if it's only me. It's no longer, I'm not seeing it any longer. This thing they call home training. Aha. So let's start from that point. Let's train our people that morality, love of your neighbor and those things are still valid. No matter either we are Gen Z or Gen whatever, those things are still valid. Structured mentoring. I mean, not just talking. structured mentoring needs to be there. Accountability system needs to be there. And it seems to start from the family. Because everybody still goes back to a family. Everybody we call, any name we call them, we still go back to a particular family. Mm. So I think we should go back to that value system, the home training system, and without another tone of religious poisoning. We need to remove that from there, that every human being is a human being first, then you have responsibility to your neighbor second, and you need to uphold a particular value system. I think that's what I just want to say, because the young people are actually very wide now, and we need to find a way to egg them out, or else our future, whatever thing we are talking today, tomorrow they just put in flames.
Thank you so much, Pastor Jeff. Sheikh, it's over to you, sir. Same question. Our youth.
I think our youth and their anger, firstly, to recognize anger as a legitimate symptom. Yeah, it's a legitimate expression. Not just, we shouldn't look at it as moral failure. They are angry. That's wrong.
It's a valid emotion.
Precisely. It's a signal usually of exclusion. It's a signal of frustration. It's a signal of when a child doesn't have the vocabulary to say what they want. Yeah. They go into a tantrum. It's an emotion that we need to empathize with, not justify. Right. I'm not saying being angry and insulting is right. No. But let's at least be more mature to recognize what is a symptom of, what's wrong that's going on. So, as the pastor said, when it comes to action, start at home. Your family is your first organization. It's your first mosque. It's your first church. It's your first where you are the CEO, you and your wife. You hire, you fire, you develop. Start with your own circle of influence, because God will ask you about that. And then your neighbors, and build your circle of influence. But not that you are so concerned about somebody else's family, you don't care about yours. That's number one. Faith leaders must learn that the anger of youth is legitimate, but without legitimizing the violence. Like, I can empathize with your pain and suffering, but not with the way you deal with it. I can understand where your problem is coming from. So it's important for us to also look at providing moral language for frustration. Where is justice required? Where is peace required? Where is patience required? Where is agency required? Where is reform required? And it's not just about insulting the darkness. We need to be more proactive and take responsibility for lighting a candle. It's not just, I have some morality because I am the best at insulting the government and insulting our leaders, and I become popular as bold. But what's your project for not inheriting what they are going to leave behind? So we must find ways of redirecting youth anger towards community service, redirect youth anger towards advocacy, redirect it towards some form of peace, civic engagement, ethical entrepreneurship. Extremists in every community recruit where there is less hope, where hope collapses. You find people not sure where to go. They look for the most charismatic people. They start looking for messiahs. And unfortunately, the messiah may be a rebel without a cause. He may be somebody who knows how to mobilize. But when you say, where exactly are you going with this? You've broken the law before you know it. And before you know it, you're on the run. So I would conclude with what the pastor mentioned, the need for faith leaders to mentor, not just admonish. We need to listen to our youth, not just lecture them. We need to redirect anger towards purpose. That, fine, it is justified, but instead of just a fire that didn't heat a pot, how can we put that youth fire towards something productive? Fire is good, too much burns, but when managed well, for the right purpose, in the right direction, expressed in the right way, fire can actually be a virtuous thing.
Thank you so much, Sheikh. This is a yes or no question. So yes or no from both sides. Do you think faith leaders have done well to defend the broken nation? Is it yes or no? And that's because it's going to lead to many more parts to this episode, inshallah. Pastor Jeff, yes or no? Have faith leaders done enough?
More of no than a yes.
Okay, political answer. Thank you. Sheikh Nuruddin Lemu, have faith leaders done enough? from your side?
No. There's always room for improvement. But, you know, your question is like, will you stop beating your husband? Yes or no?
Well, no, thanks for covering me like that.
Yeah, but I get where you're coming from.
Yeah, thank you so much to you both. And inshallah ta'ala, to my audience, we've wet your boards. And I think I can put it on MPAC on their behalf of MPAC and WFM. I believe this will be a step in the right direction to do more of this. I think there's a challenge from Pastor Jeff and, of course, Sheikh Nuruddin, not just a talk show, not just the conferences, not just seminars. So next time we're convening, we'll be talking about action points. And then next time we're convening, we're going to be sharing scorecards and all of that. And that's what we're going to be looking at this year. Fortunately, we just started the new year. So I think it's a very, very good way to start the year. Thank you so much, both of you. Regards to your families, and that's the note I'd like to end today's episode of Everyday Muslim. Join us same time next week when we bring you another bumper package of Everyday Muslim. I leave you in the hands of Maher Zain. We're one family, really. Mariam, thank you so much. Harrison, Benjamin, you guys made this all work out. Thank you so much. We'll see you next week, inshallah. Masalam.
Thank you, Sheikh.
Thank you, sister.
Thank you.
Between us two, we're part of one family. No matter how far you are,